Let's get straight to business. Whether you want to optimize your lead generation, make the most of your marketing budget, or gain and maintain a competitive advantage in the field, Monika Rusica and Lisa Davidson give you the expert insights on social selling to take your business to the next level. This episode is brought to you by Ready for Social, the B2B social selling experts. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the Straight to Business podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Davidson, and I'm excited that you join me today alongside social selling expert Monika Rusica. Hi, Monika.
Hi, Lisa.
I hope you guys at home are ready to join us as we uncover the secrets of B2B social selling in another exciting episode. Today, we will take a closer look at sales and marketing alignment, which is an essential factor in making any social selling program successful. As you guys know, sales holds and builds the right relationships within the target audience and can be highly effective in using content provided by marketing to establish thought leadership and influence customers' decision-making process. But let's stay with content as an example for just a minute. One critical factor is that the sales department has the right content readily available and can get the desired results with it. To create the perfect content mix, marketing and sales need to be close. For example, the ideal content can't be too heavily focused on the company's products and solutions, but it must also allow salespeople to talk about customer pain points and industry trends to be credible. After all, we all know that the perfect content for social selling shouldn't simply be an extension of the company's marketing machine. Another example where alignment is necessary are the content KPIs. You need to ask yourself whether your content should only generate awareness or actually contribute to a conversion and help sales to start meaningful conversations online. Still, sales and marketing alignment is much bigger than that. Before we jump into our interview part, I want to point out that sales and marketing alignment predates the more recent focus on social selling. To address some evergreen questions of sales and marketing alignment and shine a light on its recent and future strategies, we've invited industry expert Josh Sweeney to today's episode. Hi, Josh.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. We're so excited to have you here today.
Hey, Josh.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Before we dive into the details of today's episode, I'd like to provide you guys at home with a glimpse into the exciting background of our guest. Josh Sweeney is a seasoned entrepreneur whose mission is to help founders go from founder revenue to scalable revenue. He's also the founder of software consulting firm Adcore, which was acquired in 2016 by a leading partner in the CRM industry. Having experienced the impact of various sales and marketing challenges over his career, Josh has channeled his passion for sales and marketing into the creation of educational content. He has recorded over 100 content pieces about B2B sales and marketing. Josh lives and works in Atlanta, Georgia, in the United States. So, Josh, sales and marketing alignment is a topic that has only increased in importance in the age of digitalization, the disruption of the traditional customer journey, and the availability of new tools and technology. In order to tackle the topic, let's maybe start with this question. Do you think that sales and marketing should be two different departments, or does it make sense to have them as one?
So the fun thing is a lot of things in sales and marketing are very nuanced, right? There's no 20-second blurb and, you know, take one position. I think anybody can take one side of that and really give you a compelling argument. I think, you know, what we could start off to answer is really what you don't want to happen, which is two completely siloed organizations. Right. So you don't want sales and marketing as two separate departments to be completely siloed. Now, should they be one is a really challenging question because, you know, on the smaller company side, the smaller the company is, the closer to one group that should be. And it should be like a revenue team and they should be aligned and working together. But when you get into larger entities, they're split for lots of reasons around focus. And what I find is, you know, whether it is one or two, if it's two, you need some sort of forcing function to ensure that they're working together. So I think that's a nuanced, you know, question. They could be one, they could be two. It depends on the size of the company, how well that company's culture aligns sales and marketing and keeps them from being silos, and how well they work together.
Thank you. Monika, what's your take on this?
I totally can relate to what you've said, Josh. We currently work in a small company, which we don't consider a startup, but just an SMB. And for us, there's not like really a distinct sales and marketing department, exactly as you were saying. And I worked at a startup before, and it was also like, you know, in a startup or in a small company, it feels like everybody is sales anyways. And then there are certain people maybe which have a bit more of a focus on market research, focusing, mapping the market persona, listening to what customers are saying, interviewing customers, and so on. And then our clients that we work with, typically large enterprise companies with thousands of employees, yes, they have obviously distinct sales and marketing teams which have organically grown. And as Josh, as you said, it's really the focus of those departments that, you know, they need to be in a way having separate functions because they have clearly distinct roles to play in the overall organization and processes. One thing that I have observed over the past, gosh, when I left the enterprise world as such in 2011, I felt that sales and marketing were more separate then than they are today. I feel that exactly, Lisa, as you said in the introduction, with digitalization, with the technology, and also on the topic that we focus on, social selling, those are all drivers that have brought sales and marketing closer together. That's what I see in the companies I talk to, even in the large enterprise organizations.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like we were saying, it's kind of nuanced, right? In that if you have a really large enterprise, it's like how much collaboration on a day-to-day needs to happen between a brand marketing team and your sales team. Probably a lot less than if you're doing social media marketing and trying to align a certain push or campaign and get high conversions into clients with your sales team, right? So I think that's the hard thing is when you get to the enterprise level, there's so many people, you know, some are doing marketing and some are doing revenue marketing. And so it's like, is your revenue marketing team aligned with sales? And there has to be an alignment across all of these, but some warrant more day-to-day collaboration and some warrant more, you know, just general strategic alignment.
Thank you, Josh. One thing that I can maybe add to that. So one thing that we are seeing with large enterprise clients and prospects we talk to is that when that marketing has like all their different communications channels that they are planning out for throughout the year, let's say. And we've seen that social selling, which basically, you know, is like oftentimes from the marketing team, well, it started out, I would say, like years and years ago when this whole social selling topic became more prominent. We've seen that social selling was initially a lot like a marketing topic because the marketers seemed to have been the first ones from an organizational perspective. Now, not talking about individual salespeople, but marketing was the department, let's say, that kind of discovered social selling first. And they felt, okay, well, let's use our salespeople's social media channel as an additional channel where we can push out our content. That was where we saw, from our perspective as a social selling provider, where we saw the sales and marketing alignment very strongly. And then sales coming in and saying, yeah, we like this tool, but we really don't want to be like another communications channel. This needs to work differently. And then what we've seen over the years is that in that specific area of social selling, social media being a channel, embracing also the salespeople, that sales and marketing have moved much closer together there and providing the right content, enabling the salespeople and having like a really close cooperation and feedback loop.
Well, let's talk a little more about goal alignment. Josh already hinted on it a little bit. How do you ensure sales and marketing work together and aim in the same directions? And how do you balance the long-term goals like brand building and market presence with filling the quota this quarter?
Yeah, so as far as aligning sales and marketing, I think it's important that they have metrics that force the alignment, right? Or create alignment. So what we see in a lot of organizations that are misaligned is this: the head of sales shows up with their numbers and the head of marketing shows up with their numbers. And then, you know, somebody has to decipher how it all works together. And that is to various degrees in different companies. So we like to look at it and say, how are we creating alignment from a data perspective and coming in with one report? And that one report is something sales and marketing are coming to, you know, senior leadership or, you know, the board or whatever it might be together. So it's things like, what is the CAC by channel? And what is the conversion rate by channel? That really shows the number from marketing all the way through sales, all the way through conversion, using, you know, cost analysis on all of those, and gives you one unified view of each one of those areas. That's a way that you can start to align sales and marketing just by using the same set of data to report out at the executive level. And that's very different when you get down to the individual channel level, where, you know, the executive doesn't need to know every leading indicator from a sales and marketing perspective. So I think that's kind of the first thing, is really the alignment of the analytics. The other question around how do you look at some of the long-term effects and impact? Well, a lot of it can be challenging to quantify. Like, how do you quantify brand building? Well, you know, brand normally has to be factored in that, you know, some people say you can't really quantify that. But I think if you take the opposite approach of saying it can be, and you look at some of the best companies like the Apples, the LVMH portfolio, you know, you would say that you can either charge more, you can close at a higher rate than your competitors. There is an impact to having brand as part of that factor, but you really need to work with some analytical people to tease that out of the brand marketing strategy. So there's just different ways to get at the data and create alignment across the organization and measure some of the things that are harder to measure.
Good points, Josh. One thing maybe, Lisa, if I can add that from the social selling perspective, is that also there, what we try to do is with our clients work on a unified view of sales and marketing. So we typically start off with, you know, how many posts, very simple, like how many posts have salespeople shared on social media? And those posts are not only, let's say, posts that talk about the company itself, but just posts that salespeople share about customer pain points, industry trends, and so on. And then the marketing team from that can see how many impressions, how many clicks, engagements that has generated, and that can contribute towards brand or overall awareness. But then we drill it further down along the sales funnel, basically. So based on the number of posts that have been shared by salespeople, we look at how many relevant engagements have these posts created. And in this case, relevant engagement means engagements from the core target audience, not like just colleagues clicking on that same content, for instance. And then we work further down the sales funnel, is how many one-on-one interactions have come out of this. And then it gets a little bit more tricky on how to track all of this. And I can speak to that in a second. But we see how have these one-on-one interactions translated actually into additional deals, because that's what the revenue leaders are ultimately interested in. And then how do you track all of this and how do you measure all of that? That's a whole complicated discussion. I don't know if we want to get into that. We're going to talk about tools later, but it's anything from, you know, human eyes on that content, human eyes on what's happening on social media, of who is interacting with that content, to things like CRM integrations. So it really depends on where the company is with all the tech stack. But yeah, I really agree that the KPIs, also from a social selling perspective, it's like super important to have them aligned, I guess, along the marketing and sales funnel.
Like Monica already said, another crucial and much discussed topic really is the quality of the leads that you might get. Like, how can you ensure what marketing hands over to sales is actually sales ready? And from a marketing perspective, how do you ensure that the leads produced and handed over to sales are valued and followed up on? Any suggestions there, Josh?
Yeah, I think there's a number of ways that we look at quality. So the first one is the CAC, or customer acquisition cost by channel. So marketing may be able to generate tons of leads, but the cost is so high that the ratio of like the CAC to lifetime value, or LTV, is way off, right? So we can all spend lots of money and get lots of leads, but you know, the numbers don't work out on the back end when we, you know, from a company perspective, from a financial perspective. So I think that's the first thing we look at is from a quality perspective is what is the customer acquisition cost, or what is the, you know, the cost per lead in this case. And then we look at that on a channel basis. So we're able to compare like social selling against ads, and what are the conversion rates, and where do we need to optimize? So that's one indicator of quality. I think another one is just your general conversion rate, how many are coming in and how many get closed. And that's, again, another really good way to align sales and marketing, because a lot of times they can point at each other. And when you can compare multiple channels against each other, you get a better picture. But you know, to align sales and marketing, you can look at a conversion rate and say, well, was that the quality of lead, and what was the quality of the sales and the closing? You know, how does it compare against other things that we're closing? So that can get them aligned around one mission to have a certain close rate or conversion rate from a sales perspective. And I think the last one that's even further downstream that really aligns all the way through the organization, even from sales, marketing, and into delivery, is really the customer lifetime value. Because what we've seen is trends where certain channels, marketing can do a great job to bring in leads, and sales can do a great job converting those leads, but then those customers stay a longer or shorter period of time depending on service line. So there's just a lot of alignment as an organization, and you can get a really clear view when you see it all the way through the pipeline with things like CAC and by channel and conversion rates and lifetime value, and you know, all these different measurements that are strategic in nature. You know, the executive leadership has to make a decision to say, well, we have 10 service lines and we've looked at the data, and this ninth one, you know, number nine actually is just our worst performing across the board. It's an executive decision to get rid of a service line because of that. So that's where we like to take the numbers to the executive level.
Thank you so much for all these insights, Josh. Before we explore even deeper, it's time for our signature question here. Tell us, what's your ultimate favorite dish or restaurant from your part of the world?
Favorite dish? Yeah, I don't know how unique this is to the southeast of the U.S. or just the U.S., but, you know, just really good burger and fries. I've traveled around the world, and I've actually noticed that it didn't seem as common everywhere else. Maybe it's more common nowadays. But yeah, I think just a really good burger and fries combination.
I was just going to say that, good thing my son isn't listening. He's 12 and he is super much into anything that sounds or smells like fast food, whether or not it's presented in a fast food restaurant or in a proper restaurant. But burgers and fries would definitely get a question. Mom, when can we go get burgers and fries the next time?
Yeah, it's got to be a proper restaurant, though. It's got to be a real burger patty and, you know, look like a real burger.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting? I mean, my son is only 12, but he's a foodie. He's like a total, I hope it's okay, I say this on our podcast, but he's a total McDonald's snob. He would not go there. I mean, he would eat it, but he would go like, oh, this is just so bad. But the one place he likes is In-N-Out Burger in California for some reason. So it's a special burger chain. And he says, oh, but these burgers taste really good. They taste different.
Yeah, I like it when, you know, when some of the families, they always say, oh, well, let's just get some fast food real quick. My kids won't eat it. So they don't eat chicken nuggets. They don't like the McDonald's fries. Like, they're really picky. Yeah, that doesn't work for me. Like, not cooking and just getting something real quick. They do like a slice of pizza, but only specific one. Can't be too thick, can't be too thin. The cheese has to be correct. So. Okay, well, thanks for this culinary excursion, Josh. Now let's dive right back into our topic of sales and marketing alignment. Let's talk about the technology stack. What tools do you usually recommend? And do you have any best practices to share with our listeners?
Sure. So, I mean, we're big HubSpot fans. So we're a HubSpot shop and we like that platform, but there's lots of great tools and platforms out there. We like a lot of best of breed tools. So there's a lot of best of breeds tools available for, you know, for social selling, for CRM. And I think for us, you know, one of the main ingredients is just making sure that it's a solid enough and well-rounded enough tool where there's lots of people that have adopted it. So we like kind of the top three in any certain category you may need to adopt. And then just making sure that it has the ability to be well integrated. So that's the challenge we run into with some like very industry specific tools is you get to where it's like, it's a really good tool in a certain area, but there's no integration. And then it really costs you in the long run because you can't integrate it and see information across. And obviously I'm very data driven and my team is very data driven. So we're always just looking for ways to report across and make big needle mover decisions from the data. And that requires seeing a holistic picture.
I have a little bit of a side question, Josh, just something I'm interested in the context of social selling. Do you have any thoughts or what do you see in terms of the adoption in your target group of companies you work with regards to the LinkedIn Sales Navigator? It's not really exclusively a sales and marketing kind of alignment tool. While it can be used for that in the enterprise version, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of people want to use the LinkedIn tools, whether it's Navigator or any of the other tools that they provide, as well as add-on tools for like semi-automation. There's certain ones that are allowed in LinkedIn's ecosystem. There's other ones that are not. But LinkedIn is a great way to explain what sales and marketing alignment should look like from a social selling and social marketing perspective, because they're so intertwined. So I use the example, like we get people come to us and they're like, hey, we're just going to send out all these LinkedIn messages and get people to, you know, a meeting or a webinar or whatever else it is. And what we find is if you've already done social marketing on LinkedIn, like that person's been, you know, adding connections over a year in their target audience, they've been posting and they've been building and doing just best practices from a social marketing perspective. Then when they want to use it for social selling and go out and have a real ask, right, to have somebody join a webinar, get a meeting, you know, they have that more sales-oriented action, people respond. And so it's really how social selling and marketing work together and are aligned to generate an ROI from a tool like LinkedIn. And where we feel that people get more disenfranchised or disenchanted from it is they try to do one without the other. So they didn't have the social marketing on LinkedIn. They haven't been doing anything. And they just wake up and we're like, we're just going to send out a bunch of messages. And we're going to not only send out a bunch of messages, but we're going to ask for a meeting with people who don't know us, right? That's the lowest converting activity you can do on LinkedIn. But if you just built up and took some time to do it properly ahead of time, you'd get significantly better responses because you've built the brand around that rep. So I think there's a lot of really cool things when you look at social selling, social marketing, and, you know, LinkedIn. If you look at kind of that trifecta, there's a lot of things that give a really good example of how sales and marketing have to be very tightly aligned to get the best result from that. And if you just try to pick any one of those three, you may just walk away and say, this was a waste of time because it didn't work. So there's a lot of factors we see that come together to make that a high ROI versus a no ROI situation.
Super agree with what you said, and specifically the one thing where on social, there's so much about what you said about investing first, about showing your value first, about building the relationship as a company and as individuals. And I think so many still today, or maybe even now more than ever, so many people are trying just to connect and then pitch, blast messages out. And I really, whenever I talk to, our decision makers that we talk to are in marketing, but whenever I talk to people there, they are just so sick of people doing that. You know, this cold pitch without having any established relationship, any connection, nobody knows who they are. And they assume you want to talk to them. Why? I've recently actually seen one of the marketing decision makers I'm connected with. She is the SVP of marketing in an American company, but she had on her profile, very visible in her profile headline, don't connect and pitch. Like, just don't.
Right.
So, yeah, I think like what you've described is the much better approach and really great example of how sales and marketing can be aligned or should be aligned.
Yeah, what we say is like, you know, within reason, don't do anything that you wouldn't do in the real world. So unless you just believe in yourself that much, that you're just going to go pick somebody's office and walk right up to the top floor and walk into that CEO's office and just start pitching them, you know, and I've had people actually act it out. I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take this pitch you're spamming out to everybody, and I want you to just pick a name off your list and go into their office. Just walk right in and just start saying this. Do you think it'll work, right? They're going to kick you out of their office. They don't know who you are, right? So if you wouldn't do it in the real world with, you know, some leeway, obviously, this is digital, then don't do it on social. Just think about what you're doing. Think about how that resonates. And then you look at even the longer messages, it's even worse. It's like, you wouldn't even say that to another human. That's like, you know, 500 words long, and you're just going to walk in and spill that to them. Like, that's not going to work.
I totally agree. And I think sometimes it doesn't even make sense what kind of pitch you're getting. Like, I'm getting all these messages where I'm thinking, why are they talking to me? I can't use that at all. So just because one or two of their keywords were maybe somewhere on my profile doesn't mean I would be available, you know, for any of their products or anything. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Just one addition to this. I think with regards to this, especially with like the targeting and the messaging and everything, I think that's something actually that specifically when we look at the LinkedIn Sales Navigator, for instance, that marketing can really help the salespeople with. And this is something that we help our clients with, but this is what marketing in-house can help their salespeople with too, is, you know, really dig into the data of the Sales Navigator and find the right people that match the target audience, and then segment it down into different types of decision makers with different type of pain points, and really learn about those people, or maybe create actually lists in the Sales Navigator that the salespeople can address with certain type of messages, or that they can connect with in the first place and then address with certain type of messages. Because what we see is that oftentimes sales themselves, they don't have the time or bandwidth or resources to do all this digging, while the Sales Navigator provides amazing opportunities of just, you know, mapping out all these target personas, these people, buying centers and so on. I think that's where marketing and sales cooperation can also work really well, just as one little example, as we talked about the Sales Navigator.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, we talked about it a little bit earlier on, like, you know, volume versus conversion, right? When you're looking at the information, I think a lot of people get caught up on volume. So they go through and think that they posted one thing and somehow everybody's going to see their one thing, right? So marketing can really come in and compliment the sales rep and say, these are the exact number of people in your audience. It's more about building the relationship and staying in front of them for a period of time. So they recognize your name, they've seen your brand, hopefully, right? And then later, after you've, you know, started to build up some of that recognition, you have the outreach portion, you know, the social selling outreach portion of that. So I think there's a lot of things marketing can do to provide each individual sales rep with, you know, the segment they work in or the geography they work in, and really make sure they're staying in front of people, not just hitting a bunch of people and then disappearing.
Exactly. And also to add to that, to provide the relevant content also that salespeople can share, which is like, again, part of like what we do on a daily basis and what we help our clients with. But I think it's really important that that's one thing that we hear a lot from salespeople when we just, you know, talk to salespeople out there, that they say, well, I really need content from my marketing team that I can share consistently on my LinkedIn profile with my network, with my target audience, that is not just promotional, but that is also educational, that shows the value, that addresses industry trends, that talks to their pain point. And then sales doesn't typically create that kind of content on a consistent basis. So I think that's another example where a close cooperation of sales and marketing is required. Like, marketing people talk to the salespeople salespeople talk to the marketing people, take the marketing people maybe to the clients and have them, you know, hear the voice of the customers and then create content pieces that the salespeople can share that are ultra relevant to their target audience.
Yeah, it's that alignment of, I think about it through the buyer journey, right? Like if you look at the buyer journey for that salesperson may be in one industry or one geography, right? How is the marketing team providing all the content across the buyer journey to support that sales rep? Because as they post, they're going to come across people in different parts of that journey. It's a lot of alignment and it can be a heavy lift to really get the conversion rates up on that.
Yeah, the best example actually that I've heard in a workshop with sales and marketing in one of the big IT companies we work with. And I haven't heard it ever since, you know, it's such a great example. So that was a salesperson from South Africa who had joined that meeting that we had in Germany. Anyways, it doesn't matter where it was, but as a sales team, they had a dedicated marketing person sitting physically with the salespeople, with the sales team that were serving the automotive and manufacturing segment in South Africa. And that marketing person was dedicated to creating custom content for that sales team in that region, in that vertical. And I thought that was amazing. And of course, the marketing person was aligned with the overall marketing team, you know, to take the company messaging and so on, and then customize it. But I thought that was an amazing example that I haven't really heard many companies operating like that.
Yeah, that's a great example. I mean, I haven't heard of them having that good of a focused carve out. It's normally, you know, you submit it to marketing and, you know, it takes either a longer or shorter period of time, depending on who it goes to. But to have them actually sitting, you know, geographically with them and having a marketer in to support sales is really tight alignment, at least, you know, especially on the content side.
Guys, we talked a lot about large companies and obviously they're rather complex and already established in their sales and marketing processes. Josh, we hear that you actually work a lot with growing companies that still, you know, start building their content and their whole processes from scratch. What can maybe large companies still learn from these smaller companies that are actually still a little more fluid in their processes?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that can really transfer. I mean, I've done a lot of work over the years and in past roles with larger companies. And sometimes I'm really surprised how certain departments or product lines are actually run more like startups, even in an enterprise. But sometimes they layer in the bureaucracy of the larger enterprise and slow things down. And sometimes they launch those and get really scrappy. But I think some of the things they can learn is, one is, what are those scrappy solutions? How do they get certain things just going more rapidly so that they can compete in an ever-changing environment and stay very competitive, especially as they're growing net new product lines. There's a lot of alignment there in how a startup may run and get funded versus, you know, a new service line in a larger company. So there's some opportunities there. I think the other thing we see with the companies we work with, and most of the companies we work are in like the $3 to $30 million range, they really stretch the dollars. Every founder or business leader we work with in that range, they get really tight on the dollar that they're spending and how far it goes. And I think as companies grow, sometimes you get further and further from that. First of all, you know, there's dynamics where it's not actually their money versus like maybe the founder or entrepreneur, it's their dollar. So there's a little bit of an attachment that can come with that. But I think stretching every dollar and making sure it's working down to, you know, a smaller level. And of course, you have to balance that out, right? You need bigger moves in a larger company. You have bigger budgets to manage, but smaller companies really do stretch the dollar and make sure they're getting more revenue in different areas. So I think there's just different tactics and strategies to learn from.
Perfect. Thank you so much. So before we end today's episode, Josh, please give our listeners your top three tips for improving their sales and marketing alignment in 2024. Just real quick, if they really want to get going now.
Top three tips. So use analytics that align sales and marketing at the executive level. I would say know the correlation between what you're spending on sales and marketing and how it directly correlates to revenue. And then last tip, hustle harder. Sometimes it just comes down to hustling harder, at least for a lot of our clients.
That's always a good one. Josh, thank you so much for taking the time to share your knowledge with us and our listeners. And you guys at home, don't forget to connect with Josh on social media. I'll include all of his links in today's show notes. Thanks again, Monica and Josh, for joining us today. And thanks to all of you at home for tuning in once again to the Straight to Business podcast. If you're keen to learn even more about social selling and how to use it for your business advantage, join us next week. As always, you can head over to www.straighttobusiness.live for additional resources, to sign up to our email list, or to join us as a guest speaker. Don't forget, all the information from today's episode can also be found in our show notes. If you have additional questions, please feel free to comment on our blog or get in touch with us on LinkedIn. The links to our profiles are provided on our website and in the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. We hope to see you next week.